So I'm going to be speaking today about new sources of data for public health, using our electronic health records to examine population, obesity, and tobacco use, prevalence, and variation, and to talk a little bit about how we've used this data to motivate change both in our environment and in our community. I have no financial relationships to disclose today. So I work for a health system, and my CEO wants to know that what I'm working on has significance and is the right thing to work on. And so they're not going to generate or produce a lot of resources to me if they don't know that it's a significant problem. Estimates of obesity and tobacco use are largely from population-based telephone surveys. And we know that the telephone surveys suffer a number of non-participation and response biases. But really, improvement happens at the community level, and I don't have a lot of data at the community level to tell my CEO. I can't say, well, we know that obesity is a problem. It's probably about 33% of our population. My CEO isn't going to want to generate or allow for millions of dollars to work on that unless I have better data. So that's really why I did this study. Just real briefly, obesity is the second leading cause of death in the United States. The estimated annual medical cost in 2008 was $147 billion just on obesity alone. We know that obese patients spend about $1,400 a year more than the non-obese patient. And the CDC estimates about 36% of United States adults are obese. Tobacco use is the leading cause of death in the United States, even though the current rate of tobacco use is only about 19% in the nation. The estimated annual medical cost of tobacco use was about $96 billion in 2008. So two really significant problems, but yet my CEO wants to know, how does it affect our population? And I would bet a lot of the places that you work want you to have more specific data too. The sources of data that most of us use are these national surveys. The Behavior Risk Factor Surveillance System is the largest. Close to 500,000 people were surveyed in 2013. It's a telephone survey. I'll talk a little bit more about the biases to a telephone survey. The National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey combines telephone survey data with physical examination. About close to 10,000 were surveyed in 2011 and in 12. And in my look for data, I can't find good estimates of tobacco use from this survey. The third really good source of data is the National Health Interview Survey. And that involves about 35,000 people a year. And this is what obesity prevalence looks like across three surveys. So somewhere between 29 and 34% of our population is considered to be obese. And we also know that from these surveys, obesity varies quite a bit by age, affecting the 40 to 59-year-old population the most. Females, about 36% of females being obese. Black population, 47% obese versus whites of 32%, and Asian about 10.8%. Education, we see no male relationship for education, but for females we see that the college educated have a lower risk. This is the smoking prevalence across two surveys, somewhere between 18 and 19% for the nation. And we know that tobacco varies by a number of demographic variables. We do know that these surveys all suffer from some biases, and a lot of these biases have been well researched and published on. I think the most significant is that because they are telephone surveys, they are biased by sampling, in that up until 2011, cell phones were not surveyed at all. So in 2011, the CDC started surveying people with cell phones, which for the most part is what people are using today. The use of landlines has really decreased. So that is an improvement, and that they are using cell phones. But we also know that there's a response bias from cell phone or from telephone surveys, in that if I'm asked on a telephone survey how tall I am, I'm much taller than I really am, and I'm also weigh a lot less than I really do. As I said, these are well known and well published biases, and household surveys also suffer from some bias in that most of the recruitment still does occur by telephone, and we also know that people are less willing to let people into their household if they're at higher risk, so there's a lot more refusal. And I would say that the problem with a lot of this is that it's meaningfulness to those on the front line, such as myself, can be questioned, because this is data from the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance Summary nationally for the state of Wisconsin, where I live, and locally. The number in red is the local data, and this is based on data from the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance Survey that's done in my county, combining 2 years of data for 129 to 134 people. So that I can't go to my CEO and say that the rate of obesity in my community is 16%, and the rate of tobacco use is 10.5%. So I have to use state data, even though we know that we're different than the state in our community. So one thing that we decided to do was to look at our own electronic health records to determine the rate of obesity and tobacco use, and to look at how it varies across our service area, and then to use this information really to improve population health. It's not to publish this data or to say that this is the new way to gather data, but this is really, for us, we intended to use it to really look at how we could improve population health. So just a little bit about who we are so that you kind of have a context of where this data is coming from. Gunderson Health System is an integrated delivery system. I think healthcare in the Midwest is quite different than it is in many other parts of the United States. We have about 6,500 total employees. We are a physician-led organization. We have about 500 physicians and 300 physician extenders. We're located in 65 different clinic locations across three states. We have a main hospital and four affiliated critical care, critical access hospitals, which have 25 beds, so they're smaller. We have our own ambulance service. We have affiliated aging units. We have hospital and clinics. We have a shared electronic medical record, which makes this really beneficial for us because it crosses the clinic, hospital, emergency services, and labs. So all of the results are there. And we built an electronic medical record in 1995. And then in 2010, we purchased Epic Systems. This is our service area, just so you get an idea. We're right along the Mississippi River. I feel like I haven't left home. So the methods for this study were that we gathered height, weight, gender, age, smoking status, insurance type, appointment type, and total charges on patients seen in our health system in our clinic. So this is only clinic data for 2012 and 13, and that was 156,000 patients, excluding deceased patients. I also did this for pediatric patients, but I'm not including those results here today. We did look at the analysis and the variability by patient characteristics. So BMI was calculated as weight over height squared, and we found that height and weight were measured in 2012 on 84% of our patients. So I think probably if I would have backed up and said this before I showed you that, I think most of you would have thought maybe this was going to be available on half of our patients potentially at a patient visit. That's certainly what we were thinking, that maybe about half the time was a height and a weight measured. And so we were really happy to see this, and it really talks about clinic flow and practice. Whose job is it to measure height? Whose job is it to measure weight? Where is it documented? How is it documented? Is it documented at every visit? There were 17%, 16% that didn't have a height and weight, but mostly because they didn't have a height. They did have a weight. Height isn't always measured at every visit, and so what we did impute height based on the average age and gender of that person. And so for the analysis that I'm presenting today, only 8.5% of the patients do not have a body mass index. I did do this same analysis with just looking at the people with the height and weight, and there were no major differences in the characteristics. So this is what our clinical data looks like. 42% of our patients seen in 2012 had obesity, and 32% were overweight. And if you look at how the obesity breaks out, about 1 in 5 of those obese patients are in the obese 3 category with a BMI of 40 or more. So a significant amount of obesity in this population. And the 2013 numbers look really pretty much the same, 42% obese, 32% overweight. So a little bit higher than what we would expect from the state average. How it varies by gender and age. If we just look at the combination of overweight and obesity, we'd see that males are more likely to be overweight or obese than females. But what we see is that the males are more likely to be in the obese 1 category, and the females are more likely to be in the obese 2 and 3 category. And it also varies by age. If you follow the red, this is obesity, and it drops significantly at age 71. By appointment type, we see that family medicine certainly suffers the brunt of the obesity issue, but our internal medicine and our these are people that are seen multiple in multiple areas of our clinics have a lot of obesity too. The obesity for obstetrics, this is mostly patients being managed for pregnancy or prenatal care. The rate is a lot lower. I did throw the unknowns back in here to show you that folks that are coming in to our urgent care facilities or to our eye clinics or to our orthopedics clinics or any of those specialty areas, we have dental clinics as well, a lot more of them were unknown, but a lot more, which explains why the obesity rate is a little bit lower. By insurance status, if we look at private insurance versus government, the rate is pretty similar. Those who don't have insurance, the rate was lower, but again, that's because a lot of those, we don't know their body mass index. So they were probably seen in an urgent care clinic, and we didn't measure their height or weight. This is what the obesity rate, the total healthcare expenditures look like by BMI. And if your mind can draw a line, you would see that the average cost for someone with a BMI of 20 is around $9,000, and the average cost to someone with a BMI of 55 is about $14,000. So quite a significant difference in total charge by BMI. This was something that, so I was real excited about this after the first year, and so I got the second year's data. And what it showed me is that people who present only 1 year are less likely to be obese than people that come in every year. So it's important, it's really important to know if you're looking at it cross-sectionally versus over time. The folks that are continuing to come in every year have a higher rate of obesity. I also was able to look at change in weight from 1 year to the next, and I broke it out by their body mass index. The median change overall was a 0.01 kilogram gain, which we were actually real encouraged to see that is basically our population change of 0.01 kilograms, and the median percent change in weight was 0.14% gain. What we are seeing is that the highest risk folks, the obese 3 patients, the obese 2 patients, are losing some weight, whereas our underweight and normal weight folks are gaining, or more likely to gain a little bit of weight. The smoking results, smoking status was available on 95% of our patients in 2012 and 97% of our patients in 2013. And there's a really good reason for this that I'll explain in a couple of minutes, why this percent is so high that it's available. It's because we've been measuring it and been monitoring it for a number of years. But our smoking status results in 2012 showed our current tobacco use around 15.7%, and in 2013 about 15.3%. We see kind of the same differences, males 17% smoke versus females. We see highest rate of smoking in the 31 to 40 year olds, with a decline in the 71 and overs being the lowest. And then by appointment type, certainly the folks that are seen again in family medicine are more likely to smoke. The folks that are seen in our urgent care or no primary care departments are less likely to smoke, but we don't know a lot of their smoking status. This is by insurance. Here we see a lot of the uninsured, 30% of the uninsured are current smokers. And here, if we look at the folks that were present both years, the rate is about 13%, versus those that are seen one year, about 22%, 21 to 22%. And this is what the smoking status by healthcare expenditures look like. The former smokers are sort of an interesting group in that we think that they're managing a lot of their illness, so that's why their healthcare expenditures are higher. So I've kind of explained these. Obesity varies by a lot of patient characteristics, somewhat similar to what we see in the literature, and by frequency of visit, which is not exactly what we expected. The worried well potentially are those managing conditions like such as diabetes are seen yearly. And change in weight certainly varies the highest risk. Tobacco use, I think if we look at any one year, we know that tobacco users are avoiding care, so the tobacco prevalence rate, if we used only one year, would maybe underestimate our tobacco use. But does it really matter? And that's kind of what I was going to talk about. So this is, we have in Wisconsin, we have a collaborative called Wisconsin Collaborative for Healthcare Quality. And this has existed since 2005. And it's a bunch of healthcare organizations that have come together to report quality data and be very transparent. And this is the data for our tobacco use, in which in the very first time it was reported publicly, we were at about 50% of our patients being having documentation of their tobacco use. And at this point in time, we had done amazing work in our clinic and in our community at doing tobacco cessation. But my CEO isn't very happy about having the lowest rated quality measure. And so that transparency really pushed it to a, it's now a mandated thing at visits. And when your providers all see this quality data, and they see their own dashboard, and they see that they're not asking it, it changes behavior rather quickly. So this is measuring adult tobacco use, and then this is providing cessation advice. A little bit harder to document, but that doesn't mean that it can't be documented, and we're improving there. And we're, I think, out of 19 facilities, we're ranked fifth, I think. So the thing that we've done with the obesity data really is to drive a strategic plan around this. So 42% is not okay. And this is very small, and it's meant to be small because it's my secret. This is our strategic plan, and if you want to get a copy of it, you certainly can. But the point that I wanted to make is that it's driven a whole bunch of initiatives within our clinical settings, which include measurement of obesity, which has all of those, do you have to measure height at every visit kind of questions. It has some special information around counseling. There's special patient populations that we need to look at. We need to look at the high-risk groups. But we also have our own employers and other work sites that we have strategic initiatives around. We have a lot of community initiatives that we're involved in that we partner with, some that we lead, some that we partner, some that we lag. We have research agendas that we've that drive a lot of the other initiatives. And then we're really focused on the environmental change piece in our, within our 20-county area. So none of the vending machines in our institution now offer, well, we're at 90% diet, so 90% is healthy items and 10% is unhealthy, and all the healthy items are 85 cents. So we've really taken, we're part of the Michelle Obama's Partnership for Healthier America, and our health system, we don't have a fryer in our health system any longer either. So we're pushing a lot of these initiatives out into the environment to make it, to create a healthier environment. So does this data represent the population of the 20 counties? Maybe not, but certainly represents the patients that we see, and we can act upon that data. We know that obesity is probably overestimated just a little bit, and tobacco might be underestimated, but it's still going to help us. My CEO will put money towards this now because he has better numbers. So we will wait with questions, but thank you for your time.